coming up on Making Democracy Work, another candidate forum hosted by the League.
This is Studio 809 Podcasts, informing, connecting, and empowering the residents of the Pikes Peak region.
Casting an informed vote is your right and your duty as a citizen. We're gearing up for the November election and bringing candidates to you virtually with our candidate forums. The League is hosting many candidate forums in person and virtual. We'll be replaying all of the forums as episodes of Making Democracy Work, so we've got one for you now. Thank you for being an informed and engaged citizen. This is the League of Women Voters Candidate Forum for Colorado House District 22. I am your host, Shelley Roars. You're coming to you live from the Heritage Building at 4291 Austin Bluffs Parkway. We had some confusion with our previous location, but I think this is kind of working out for us. So thank you so much. And join our candidates here tonight. Again, House District 22, we have Mr. Daniel Campagna with the Unaffiliated Party, and then Mr. Michael Pearson with the Democratic Party. So thank you both for joining us. And our moderator for tonight, myself, and then, of course, joining me to my right is Angie Stevens with the NAACP Colorado Springs. Thank you.
Well, again, I am Angela Stevens with the Colorado Springs branch of the NAACP, and we are going to get started. The first question... you will get the opportunity to introduce yourselves. You'll get 1 minute. And the first person up is Mr. Campagna.
Thank you. Thank you, League of Women Voters, and everyone who's come tonight, because you care about the real issues in our community. I'm Daniel Campagna, a small business owner, suicide survivor, and an overcomer, a mental health advocate, an active citizen in our community, and like 50.3% of our district. I'm an unaffiliated voter who's putting people above politics. I'm not running because I have a partisan agenda or political career path, but because there's real issues that we have to address. Mental health care, child care, rising housing costs. You know the issues we're facing. And in that, the real solutions are connected to our strength together, us coming together to tackle the real stuff. And so this November, I'm asking for your vote. Not to represent any party or any special interest, but you and you alone. I'm Daniel Campagna, and I'm running to be your representative this November.
Thank you. Mr. Pearson, 1 minute.
Well, I'm Michael Pearson, the Democratic candidate for House District 22. I'm a husband, father, veteran, and volunteer. I spent more than 30 years, serving my country, and now I want to serve you as your representative in the Colorado legislature. I've spent a lifetime of service. I believe a servant leader is one who leaves their ego at the door and does the hard work to find solutions to make everyone's life better. Over the last 2 years, our current representative has not given us this level of service. That's why I'm running to be your next representative. I want to represent all of you. I think everyone in Colorado deserves the chance to live the American dream, the Colorado dream, without fear of intimidation. I look forward to tonight's forum and what questions you have for us.
Thank you. All right, so the first question will go to Mr. Pearson. You get 1 minute. What experience do you have working with organizational budgets?
Well, I said I spent 32 years working for the U.S. Air Force at the very end with Space Force. So I've worked with budgets that have ranged from a couple thousand dollars from my own office up to tens of millions of dollars with the Air Force Space Command. I've seen the budget process. I've seen how people bring budgets. I've seen how arguments go on budgets. And I've seen how organizations work together to prioritize what needs to be done within the organization within the limits of the budget that's there. And I think that's what we need to do as a legislature in Colorado.
Thank you. Mr. Campagna, same question. 1 minute.
I'm really proud of this because as a small business owner, we have a fundamentally different approach to everything. When resources are tight, we have to get resourceful. I run multiple small businesses. In my early 20s, I started a nonprofit. that requires us to treat every budget line item with the same care and accountability as your family does in our community. With rising housing costs and the real issues we're facing, we have to have a different approach of accountability at our state level.
Thank you.
All right, moving on to the next question. Mr. Campagna, you'll have this one first. Sorry, we're just kind of switching it up, right? What activities do you support in Colorado Springs or El Paso County?
I'm proud of this, too, because a lot of the reason why we're running is that we've already been doing the work, already involved in community boards like We Fortify that's tackling youth homelessness and housing, involved with Pikes Peak United Way on their public policy board. Since day one in our community, we have hit the ground running, working to serve our community in things that actually are affecting our community, like our mental health crisis. And so it would be our privilege to continue that effort on the current boards and continue that advocacy into the state needs that we have.
Same question, Mr. Pearson.
Well, I'm a proud volunteer at Karen Share Food Bank here in Southern Colorado. I've seen the impact that the food bank has, that the nonprofit sector has, on the lives of people here in Southern Colorado. And just that little bit of help sometimes helps people get through that month to make their rent, to be able to pay for their medication. So I'm really proud of what we do at Karen Share. I'm also a docent at the Space Foundation. It gives me the time to nerd out a little bit and work with the little kids that come in from different school programs, pass on my love of science and space to them. I'm also a member of the board of directors at the Peterson Air and Space Museum. In previous years, I have volunteered with the Red Cross in helping people to prepare disaster preparedness kits, which, you know, is coming really to the fore again as we see the hurricane damage that's done in North Carolina right now.
Thank you. Mr. Pearson, we'll go back to you. What plans do you have to communicate with your constituents? 1 minute.
Oh. Yeah. I think the most important thing that a representative can do is speak with their constituents, meeting regularly with their constituents, and I will do that. I will do that in person or via Zoom call at least once a month during the legislative session. And then during the summertime, the time off season, I will also be out in the community as I have been, talking to people, going to community events like the Indian Festival I went to a few days ago, Doherty High School football games, just getting out there and meeting people and letting them know that I care about them, care about their issues, and listening to what they have to say.
Thank you. Mr. Campagna, same question. One minute.
Thank you. And this is the cool part about already been doing the work. As an unaffiliated candidate, our process to the ballot took us through 8,100 door knocks. A lot of times in party politics, people sometimes get onto the ballot just through the insider politics of a small room of insiders. We're actually going straight to the voters. 8,100 door knocks. We're about to knock on thousands more doors, get in front of our community, and we've been actively involved. And so our commitment to communicate with constituents is through that type of real face time throughout the entire process.
My turn? Okay. Mr. Campagna, you'll answer this one first. 1 minute as well. Name your top three priorities for our community.
Easy. And this is the thing that, you know, I've been very honest about the mental health crisis we're facing, but also my own background. I'm a suicide survivor and an overcomer. Our community is number six in the nation for teenage suicide. This is a crisis we have to be honest about. We have to bring into the light with courage and compassion. That is issue number one. Issue number two is the rising housing costs. It is expensive to live in our community, and we're pricing out our first responders and our teachers. And third, it's education. We have to be able to connect education to economics. Our investments in education is an investment in our workforce. And frankly, we have to compete, not just at a state level, but at a global level. Our students are, we have to get them ready, not for the jobs of tomorrow, but the jobs that are already here. And so our commitments are really clear. They're connected to the issues our community is facing, and we're the ones to represent our community to tackle them.
Yes, sir. Mr. Pearson, same question.
Well, as I've been out talking to people around the district and just trying to find out from them what's important to them and what we can actually affect at the state level, one of the biggest issues that I do hear from people is the rapid expansion in Colorado Springs and just how overburdened our infrastructure has become. If you didn't know, the state of Colorado through CDOT runs Powers Boulevard, so they're responsible for planning on Powers Boulevard. And that was one of the things I heard about from people, hey, is there anything you can do about how bad traffic is on Powers? So I opened up the CDOT strategic plan, only to find that there are no plans to do any additional work on Powers beyond the work that's going on right now. So I am going to make sure that CDOT prioritizes the intersections at least of Dublin and Constitution and Powers to get that work into the planning stage, because I know it takes 10 to 20 years to do these kind of projects. Also finding creative solutions to our housing crisis to make housing more affordable for our working families. And I'd like to see our outdated laws on union organizing re-looked at. Some of these go back 100 years.
Mr. Pearson, we'll start with you first. How do you plan to work with other layers of government? 1 minute.
Sure. So my job in the Air Force was an area called public affairs. So a big part of my job was to work with local county and state governments to resolve issues between the Air Force, usually problems going on the base and the local community. So I have more than 30 years of experience in doing that. I've also worked with other federal agencies. So I see how the interaction can go right. I've seen when it can go wrong. And usually it's the intent of people going in to either make it work or to resist making that change. So I think the going in position for me is always, how can we build a coalition here between what your organization can do, what resources we have here, what needs we have on both sides of the fence, and bring in different organizations and different agencies to bear on where their strengths are, to fix what's needed to be fixed in our community, again, to make people's lives better.
Thank you. Mr. Capagna, same question.
And I'm proud of this, too, because this is where day one, if elected and when elected, we've already been doing the work. Last week, I had a really amazing conversation with our Mayor Yemi talking about 2C. You're right, CDOT does tackle our roads, but CDOT is currently focused on roads across the state, and we need 2C to pass. And so our already existing conversations and connections with local leaders and why we have endorsements from both Democrats and Republicans, local and state leaders, is because we're already tackling the issues that we have to tackle collaboratively. CDOT has to work in conjunction with 2C passing. So we have the funds to make sure that all these things, then these issues that our community facing get tackled. But that's where our existing positive relationships, the existing conversation we have on an ongoing basis, that makes us most prepared to have those collaborative relationships across governmental agencies.
All right, so moving on from the questions that you were given, those were the questions that all the candidates have been given. Your first audience question, we're going to give you 1 minute. Mr. Campagna, you will answer this one first.
Awesome.
What do you see as the most important part of a successful district, and how will you legislate it?
Oh, that's such a good question. I'm a big believer in healthy neighborhoods. There's an approach to planning and cities that, you know, a city has to work from everyone 8 months to 80 years old. You know, walkable neighborhoods, healthy small business, our small businesses in our community. If every dollar that you spend on a small business, 65 cents stays in the community. And that's in contrast, I think it's 35 or 45 cents on the dollar if it goes to a chain or somewhere else. So our small businesses, especially on the Academy Corridor, are vital for the community's success. So our approach in all this is to make sure that we work across with small business leaders, housing leaders, HOAs, and governmental leaders to make sure that we have healthy neighborhoods and healthy businesses.
Yes, sir. Mr. Pearson, same question.
So what is a successful district? You know, as I go around and I talk to people and I visit in their districts, you know, I don't see a lot of big cars, a lot of big houses. I don't see big boats in the driveways. What I see are working families. I see a lot of construction trucks. I see everybody's got a dog. These are working families just trying to get through their day. And I think as government officials, we need to ask them, okay, what do you need to make your life easier? Less expensive, easier to navigate. As I keep saying, you shouldn't have to hire a lawyer to get through life. How can we simplify our laws? And I think just helping people get through their days and making their lives easier, that is a successful term for a representative and really any member of government.
Thank you. All right, so then the next audience question, would you share your thoughts on any one of the ballot issues on the current ballot? 1 minute. Who started? Mr. Pearson, can you start? 1 minute.
On any one of the ballot issues. There's a ton of them. If anybody got their blue book, it looks like a phone book.
There are a lot.
And it's good. I mean, direct democracy is part of our system. It allows us to just give our voices as voters on specific issues. I think the one that comes to mind is the ranked choice voting. I have some concerns about it because it's hard enough to get people interested in voting altogether. I mean, just to get them to understand. Every time I meet a teacher now, I ask them if they teach civics because I've got a bone to pick with them. How few people understand that there's even a legislature in Colorado. So I'm worried about that being too complex, but I do think that it will provide an opportunity for people who may not otherwise join the political fight to get out there and put themselves out in front of a microphone like this and actually take the chance to do that. It may encourage them to do that. So I'm neutral on it. I'm not really supporting either way, but I do think it's a good conversation worth having.
Thank you. Mr. Capella, same question.
I'll say this. I'm for ranked choice voting. We've seen in other states where it's passed, it has actually helped underrepresented groups and minorities have a larger voice in their democratic system, given actually what happened in the state of Alaska. The first indigenous representative at the Senate level because of ranked choice voting. But I'll go back to 2C. 2C, and our community knows, potholes are not Republican or Democrat. They're not unaffiliated. They affect everyone. And we have to pass 2C. And working with local leaders and really beating that drum that our roads, the impact of that, it's not just a smooth driving experience and, you know, making sure our tires aren't out of alignment. It actually is economic, the ability to get to work on time. It's traffic. Or in worst case scenarios, first responders needing to get to an area of concern. So I highly recommend everyone vote yes on 2C. But vote on every issue. These things matter, and definitely do your research on all these different concerns.
Thank you.
Mr. Campagna, you're going to get the first one on this one as well. I am an employed college graduate, 26-year-old and native to House District 22. Again, this is not me. This is an audience question, so I wish. What policies on affordable housing do you have planned? 1 minute, please.
Great question. And the trick of where our housing costs have gone up, we've been in a long-term shortage of supply. And not just any type of supply, but really what we call the missing middle. These are the starter homes. These are the homes that our teachers and our first responders need and our college graduates need. To get housing costs down, we have to look at encouraging students to know that trades are a great option. We have a shortage of trades and that affects housing costs, but also we need to look at how we collaborate with local leaders and county leaders on zoning so we ensure that really, again, first responders and teachers, our teachers, they are doing a great job teaching. They are teaching civics. They are doing the best they can on small salaries and they can't afford the communities they serve. And so making sure that we have housing for our educators and our first responders and prioritizing that missing middle, that's a strategy we have to take.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Mr. Pearson, same question, please.
I think affordable, attainable housing is it's the economic issue of our time, at least of this decade. We've seen the recovery out of COVID just has not kept up with the supply of housing right now, and especially affordable housing. I'm a pretty disappointed with some of the developers in town here. The ideas that they're bringing forward to build houses in the $500,000-$900,000 range. Julie and I love to go to the parade of homes and go through the $3.5 million homes, and they're lovely. But they're not meeting the needs of people in this community. So I'm thinking we need to get more dense housing. We need denser neighborhoods. We need more infill in our communities. We need to encourage that. It's better for everything. It's better for utilities, fire, schools, for walkable neighborhoods are more tight neighborhoods. The people who live in those neighborhoods get more support from their neighbors than living in the sprawling suburbs. There's still going to be need for that, I understand. But we need to look at multifamily housing, we need to look at prefab housing, and all kinds of different ideas.
Okay, next audience question, and Mr. Pearson, we'll start with you, 1 minute. Would you give more details regarding union organizing, and do you think the laws are outdated?
That was rewritten just by whoever submitted that question. I did rewrite that a little bit for me. The wording was, so just an FYI, that it's an audience question again. Would you give more details regarding union organizing, and do you think these laws are outdated? 1 minute.
Sure. The laws that apply to organizing unions here in Colorado go back to the anti-union days in the late 1800s. It's very difficult for employees, if you want to organize your grocery store or your warehouse or whatever, you have to basically do two rounds of union voting. So it doesn't really put you in any kind of a position to negotiate good benefits and pay with your employer when they can just wait for you to actually have a union vote. And then once you do, they can roll in the resources they need to fight back on that. And I think it's unfair. I don't know why we would need two rounds of voting. If you want to organize within your business, you should be able to just hold a vote of the employees and say, we want to have a union, and then nominate people to negotiate on your behalf with that employer. So I think we need to take on these laws and policies that go back to the gold mining days.
All right. Mr. Capagna, same question.
Easy. We need to support labor. But I want to expand the answer a bit to that, listening to labor and listening to unions and organizations. The Police Protective Association, they represent police. Fire has been, there's so many groups that part of this is not just labor laws, it's sitting down with leaders of these organizations and listening. And when it looks like, we'll go to the housing conversation, the HBA has worked in sponsoring educational programs, the Home Builders Association, for trades and our students. And so those are things that some of this, you know, not everyone may join a labor union, but everyone's going to be affected by great leadership when we choose to listen to the organizations that represent their members. And that process, especially when it comes to housing, is important so we can reduce housing costs, listen to first responders, and also honor labor.
Thank you.
Mr. Campagna, again, your first to answer. What legislation regarding mental health could help our community? 1 minute.
This is so much. Honestly, our points of crisis, we have so much need to not only have a conversation on mental health, but not just expand points of crisis, but offer graduated response. Not every person who's going through a mental health crisis is, well, not everyone's in the same boat. And having the compassion to know that people at different stages of crisis, or even prevention, having a multifaceted approach to that is really important. And so legislation can look at, how do we support our emergency room services? How do we look at community leaders like Children's Hospital, that they have been really supporting and expanding their emergency care services for mental health and children? So there is so much that we can do at the state level. There's some great work that's been done, like the iMatter program that was passed several years ago, focused on helping every student in Colorado have access to therapy. So there's great work that's been done, but this is where our knowledge and connection to this issue really well positions us to advocate for the laws that we need to work on.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Pearson, same question.
You know, mental health care is health care. It is just as important as physical health care. It needs to be destigmatized. I've unfortunately just had too many encounters within my military career with people who are having mental health problems and they're dismissed. They're talked down to. It needs to be destigmatized. If you break your arm, nobody is going to make fun of you for getting health or getting help for a broken arm. We need to have that same kind of attitude about mental health care. And I think as a state, as the health care agencies that provide services to people in the state, we need to have that attitude toward people, to deliver health care to them on a basis that, you know, one kind of health care is just as legitimate as another kind of health care. Our teenagers really need help. After COVID, they've really come out of a difficult time. We need to really concentrate on what we can do through our schools, through our neighborhood programs. Mayor Yemi's 1,000 neighborhood program is outstanding because it's getting to know the people who are around you that really fortify your mental health.
Thank you, gentlemen. As a therapist, I appreciate both of your answers. All right.
Thank you for serving.
Mr. Pearson, we'll start with you. Is there a way to fund all schools so all are adequately resourced?
Is there a way? Yes. It's a priority. I mean, in our budgets in our homes, we prioritize what's important to us. Your rent or your mortgage gets 100% funding because it is the most important thing to keep a roof over your head. Feeding your children, feeding yourself, taking care of your health care. We can prioritize the budget within the state budget here to make sure that we fully fund our schools. Education is our future. It's an investment in our future. And we really have no good excuse for not fully funding our schools. We have no excuse for not taking care of our teachers and our staffs, including school nurses. Wife used to be one. To make sure that our children have the resources and the safety and the health that they need to take over for us someday.
Thank you. Mr. Capella, same question.
Yeah, and this, I want to dive a little bit deeper. A few years ago, our state treasurer, Dave Yon, came out and with the numbers that we had a $1.2 billion deficit in school infrastructure. That is just roofs, plumbing, asbestos. So the need is real. And wherever your stance on any side of the political aisle, I think we all agree our students have to be able to go to schools that are healthy. Like the buildings have to be healthy. In that, I want to put forward a thought to all of us because this was a conversation I had with someone from Doug Lamborn's office was, you know, our Department of Corrections receives a large amount of funding in our state. And I think we need a long-term generational plan of how we, because again, there's only so many dollars, you know, there's only so many places where resources can be spent. We don't need to raise taxes in a time where people are already feeling the effects of inflation, but we do need to go, hey, where do we want to prioritize? Do we want to be known for some of the best prisons in the nation, or do we want to be known for the best schools in the nation? And how do we have a 20 to 30 year plan that goes beyond any single legislator to be able to shift our priorities into our schools?
All right. Thank you to both of our candidates. I think according to my script, it's 30 minutes into our form. We're going to take a quick break, let our candidates kind of take a breather real quick. So don't go away on your live audience as well. We do have more questions. Thank you so much for all of these. They're very helpful because I'm over here writing at the beginning and we may need a couple questions on our own. So that thank you for doing that. I'm not sure if any of them came in online, but if you are online, make sure you're submitting those as well. We want to thank our media sponsors. This is a great time for us to thank the people that help us put all of this together. Studio 809 Podcast and Longmire Sound Engineering bringing you the sound and visuals tonight for tonight's forum. So thank you, gentlemen, for in the back and the lovely wife for also testing everything. And Terry and Denny for setting up. Appreciate you guys. KOAA Channel 5, KRCC Public Radio, also our media sponsors. Our other co-sponsors include AARP, Black and Latino Leadership Coalition, Citizens Project, Colorado Latinos Vote, Delta Sigma Theta Sorority, Latina Equity Foundation, NAACP Colorado Springs, Neighbors for Education, Pikes Peak Diversity Council, Special Kids, Special Families, and Together Colorado, Colorado Springs Faith Table. So thank you to all of those sponsors. I don't think I have anything else because we already introduced our elected officials unless I missed somebody coming in. So thank you for that. So going back, this says 10 minutes for a break. Am I doing 10 minutes for a break, ma'am? Just keep on going. All right. I'm sorry. I'm so sorry.
I'm good. Let's go.
You guys are awesome. I was going to say, does anybody need a break? Okay. So we're going to go ahead. We have more audience questions. I'm going to start one, and I believe we're reverse order, so from the opening statement. So I believe, Mr. Campagna, you started opening statements. Mr. Pearson, you were going to start my first round of questioning on the second round here. And I do want to get a clarification as well. Remember, the league is nonpartisan. All candidates are invited. We did have one candidate who was unable to attend this evening. We do wish him and his wife, we understand she is recently out of the hospital, so wishing her well. But remember that we never have empty seat forums for the league. There is, we do appreciate the candidates that are here, so if that answers your question on where the other candidate is this evening. But my first question, and for some of you, I asked you during the podcast, is what makes you different from your opponents? Basically, I'm going to put you right to the fire after that short break. So, Mr. Pearson, you're first. What, 1 minute, tell us what why you are different from your opponents.
Well, I have two opponents in this race. Obviously, Daniel is here. Ken couldn't be here tonight, but I'm going to talk about Ken first. Ken DeGraff has had 2 years in the Colorado legislature to prove himself, to prove that he can represent this district, to prove that he can work for the people of this district in an honorable and professional way. And he's failed to do that. Ken DeGraff has spent the last 2 years up in Denver demonizing people, talking down to people, tearing people down. I am different from Ken DeGraff in all those ways that I will not do that. I am a person who builds coalitions, who builds people up, who tries to find common ground with people to get things done. I can put my ego aside and do what's right for the people of Colorado. Daniel and I agree on a lot of things. I think you've heard that tonight. But here's the big difference between Daniel and I. When I go to the Colorado legislature, I'm going to have a family. I'm going to have a Democratic family who knows and trusts me. When Daniel gets up there, he's going to have to fight and struggle for the trust of the Democratic Party, for the trust of the Republican Party, because he belongs to neither family.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Campagna, same question, please.
It's a good question, and I've got a great answer for you, because since we have endorsements from both Republicans and Democrats, I think there's kind of a difference just out the gate. We built coalition, and it's a true coalition of a wide spectrum of views. The other thing that makes us different is the campaign with the most ground game, 8,100 doors just to be on the ballot. Like, our commitment is fully shown from day one. And the other thing, too, is that when it, and really, you're right, there's a lot of issues we agree on. We get to go to the Capitol focused on things that we all know, education, housing costs. But one of the other differences, and this is the benefit of being an unaffiliated, right now we have a supermajority of the Capitol. A supermajority that doesn't always have to face contrast or doesn't have to always flesh out ideas. And so sending an unaffiliated candidate that can work with both sides from day one, with endorsements and friends on both sides, and trust built on both sides, that allows us not only to build coalition, to provide contrast when needed.
Thank you. All right, we're going to start this one. Can you hear me? We're going to start this one with Mr. Campagna.
Yeah.
Got it. It's a two-part question, yeah. So we'll give you 2 minutes.
Thank you. Oh, cool.
Okay. Do you believe climate change is an urgent issue? And then what kind of policies would you promote to address this issue?
It's a good one for 2 minutes. I do believe climate change is real, but there are some qualifications with this. And this is where building collaborative partnerships across different level governments are important. And I'm going to deep dive into something a little nerdy but affects everyone, because we can talk about utilities. Recently, and I referenced the supermajority of the Dems that we have at the Capitol, there was clean energy mandates passed. And those clean energy mandates passed needed to be fleshed out again with our local utilities leaders and city council and with Mary Emmy. And credit to Mary Emmy for fighting for our city, for making sure that we really go, okay, if we pass energy mandates but they're not in consideration with local leaders, that cost gets passed on to consumers. And over the next 5 years, that could raise costs to every resident by $100 a month over the next 5 years. We have to pay attention. But by paying attention, we have to listen to our local leaders. And so climate change is real. You know, we see increasing storm effects. We see flooding in communities in our southeast. But to tackle that doesn't mean just passing legislation without the involvement and collaboration of stakeholders and those affected. Because those affected, especially in a community where, you know, the rising inflation is still here. Inflation rates have slowed down, but we're still left with that increased cost. This is not the time to pass costs on to our consumers. This is not the time to ignore and listen to local leaders. And so my commitment in tackling climate change or any issue is for us to work with our mayor, our city council, our county commission, other state representatives that are saying, hey, what do we do to affect our local community first so we can tackle these big issues while considering everyone's pocketbooks?
Thank you. Mr. Pearson, same question.
Climate change is real. I'll start with that. The majority of the scientific community has said that the Earth is warming, and the majority of the scientific community has said that it's from human cause. Okay, we know that. And I'm sure you can find a few people here or there who will tell you something different, but you can still find some scientists out there who will tell you smoking is healthy too. So I think we need to take a practical look at it. I consider myself to be a patient progressive, as I call myself. So I think we need to move toward a carbon fuel-free future. But I'm willing to discuss how fast we get there because, as Daniel talked about, there is an impact on everyone's lives, on everyone's finances, to rushing, I think, toward technology that's not yet mature, to trying to jam too much clean technology onto people's lives before it's really mature and while it's still very expensive. I think oil and gas is going to be part of our lives, really, for the next generation. It took more than 100 years for us to move into the industrial age, where we're burning oil now from moving things with farm animals. And it's going to take us a long time to move away from fossil fuels to a fully electrified future. But I want to keep moving in that direction. While oil and gas is still, production is still a big deal for us here, we need to hold those companies accountable. We need to hold them accountable for being good neighbors, protecting our environment, just like we would any other company in Colorado.
All right, next question. I believe, Mr. Pearson, you're first on this one. Yes?
Sure.
All right, if you lose, what does that mean for you, and what would you do next?
Well, if I lose, I can go back to driving my Zamboni part-time, which is my part-time job. Have a great ski season this year. You know, I didn't get into this because I want to be a politician. I got into this because I recognize that our current representative is not representing us. And I was in a position to step forward and offer myself as an alternative. What will I do next? I will probably run again if I don't win this election. I will run again for this office because I am dedicated to the people in this community. I've met some fantastic people in this community, and I'm really impressed with their hardworking, with just raising their kids and running around with their dogs, and I want to help them as a leader, and so I think I definitely will run again.
Mr. Campagna, same question, please.
And it's exciting because the honor of running for this position is a reality, and I've had friends that have encouraged me and said, you know, we're already doing the work. And so if we don't win, we will continue to do the work. And there's a lot of work to do. I had the privilege of speaking with Ken today, and I deeply respect his decision to stay with family and to prioritize health. But, you know, if we don't win, and I think we're going to win, but if we don't win, we'll work with whoever's in office to make sure that mental health policy and law gets passed. The platform that we run on, we believe in. It's not about running for the next position, should we not win this one. It is about focus on these issues. And because we really put, you know, our money where our mouth is, this Thursday we're actually releasing a nationwide platform on voter engagement and awareness, which will go live for the entire state of Colorado. But that's our commitment. No matter what we do, no matter what it looks like, we're committed to serving our communities, making engagement and awareness real, and to fight for the mental health issues that we've been fighting for this whole time.
Thank you. Okay, next community question. All right. Starting with Mr. Campagna. What do you think about repurposing a dying mall properties with huge parking lots and affordable housing units?
Oh, whoever asked that, great job. This is, there's a term in urban planning called adaptive reuse. And if you can look at two case studies between Chapel Hills Mall or Citadel Mall. Citadel Mall is not just a safety concern, it's an economic one. And so every time we have an empty storefront, what takes its place is safety concerns. But Chapel Hills Mall, in a little forward thinking, we know the malls in America are not what they used to be. To take empty parking lots, which are basically heat sinks in our community, and allow there to be apartments and access for that missing middle. That is a model that not only brings commerce and shopping and foot traffic, but it helps us go, hey, we have a housing need. And so I am definitely for adaptive reuse. When you look at the Academy Corridor and the important artery it is in our community, we have to make sure it thrives. And so working with local leaders, working with builders, how do we incentivize that missing middle? How do we, I think everyone in our community would rather see beautiful row homes and access for our teachers to live than to have empty parking lots or empty strip malls.
Mr. Pearson, same question.
I think it's well beyond shopping malls. As we look around this city, as I've driven around my neighborhood, there's big lots of property right in the middle of our neighborhoods. Jill Gabler, who is a former member of City Council here, had a great idea at a housing forum that I attended. And she calls it Yes in God's Backyard. It's engaging with churches to try to find some of the property that they have available that's just sitting out there. It's not being parked on. It's just grassland to build affordable housing, build denser housing within our communities. I think we've got these big chunks of land throughout Colorado, especially along the Front Range, where the development just ran past, or there was a mall or a shopping center or a big church that's not using that property. And if we build as infill instead of way out on the plains as we tend to, the utilities are cheaper, the police coverage is easier, the fire coverage is easier, the neighborhoods are more walkable and just more personal. And I think we need to take a hard look at those big chunks of property we have, not just here in Colorado Springs, but all up and down the Front Range.
Thank you. Sure.
I'm going to give you 30 seconds for this one. So.
Lightning.
That's right, lightning round, because we've got a few of them here that are 30 seconds. I've got a couple that are yes or no. So 30 seconds. What made you want to run for this office, and who has endorsed you? And I believe, Mr. Pearson, you are first, sir. 30 seconds. What made you want to run for this office, and who has endorsed you?
Well, I think you've already heard why I want to run for this office, to be a better representative than the current representative we have right now. Jeff Chostner, the district attorney down in Pueblo, has endorsed me. Jay Lindell, who was the aerospace champion for Governor Hickenlooper, who said that I was partially responsible for helping Space Command stay here in Colorado Springs. He has endorsed me. Mayor Mike Ginn, a Republican mayor out of town out in California, who I worked with a lot during my time in the Air Force, he has endorsed me. River Gasson, she's the CD5 candidate, has endorsed me. The teachers union, the AFL-CIO,
Time. I'm so sorry. Mr. Campagna, same question, please.
Thanks. And I think the distinction here is local leaders. Local leaders like our most fashionable member of our state legislature, Dr. Regina English, who's a Democrat. Local leaders like Dave Geisinger, city council, who is a conservative. Local leaders like Nancy Henjum, who's District 5 for city council. State Senator Tony Exum, the chair of the Housing Commission. And so this is the thing, and outside of even endorsements, we're already working with leaders like Jill Gabler, have the privilege of knowing Pastor Ben Anderson, who the project you referenced, that Solid Rock Community Church, Colonel Brian Wardinger, former garrison commander from Fort Carson, Joe Reagan, CD5 candidate. So local leaders and local involvement.
Okay, 1 minute. How would you discourage hate crimes in our state and in our city?
Who's going first? Sorry. I just took a deep breath as if I
was Mr. Capagna, my apology.
Oh, this one, I mean, and again, we have to remember that Club Q just happened. Hate crime is unacceptable. There's no place for it in our society. There's never been a place for it. But I think part of it is having even more open conversations. You know, there's this, I'm proud that we're a city that elected a black mayor, an unaffiliated black mayor, to the mayorship of a major U.S. American city. But we need to have these conversations in the open. We need to say that every member of our community is welcome. Every member of community should feel safe. And there's no negotiating with that. Every person is welcome in Colorado Springs.
Thank you. Mr. Pearson, same question.
It's a matter of respect. It's a matter of respecting each other as human beings. And I will not tolerate, I cannot tolerate the hateful speech that I've seen in this last year from a certain political party. None of us should tolerate that, because it's not America. And I have been all over the world, and I have seen where hateful behavior, hateful speech, hate crimes have torn people apart, and torn lives apart, and I've had to go in and clean up after those kind of people, those kind of situations. It is awful. We don't want to go there, and we need to stop hate speech and hate crimes at every opportunity.
All right, this is yes, no, really quick. So Mr. Pearson, you're first on the yes, no. No, in, no, we don't need to go into anything, I think, because this is pretty easy. Yes, no, Mr. Pearson, was the 2020 election stolen, yes or no?
No.
Mr. Campagna, same question. Thank you.
Easy.
Check that one off.
Thank you for...
why we're still talking about this.
Yeah.
Next question, 1 minute. Mr. Capagna, you're first. Regarding mental health and community health, how do you plan to address the disproportionately...
Is this yes or no? Just...
No,
okay, good.
No.
Thank you.
...of crises faced by minority groups.
Oof. Well, and so... And you're right. There. How many minutes? Or
one.
Oh, okay. There we go. Well... And this is where the disparity in care is honestly a lack of clinicians. Thank you for being a clinician. Thank you for being a therapist. We do need to encourage more people to enter the field. In the same way, we need to encourage more teachers. We need to make it affordable for teachers to be in the field. We need to help the path of therapists to become therapists. And so that could look like state legislation of how we work with our mental health system in existence, with Children's Hospital, and how we can not only encourage students to become therapists, but make it easier for them to go through that licensure process. And to the military service, we have a lot of military spouses that move here. And some of them are clinicians. To make sure licensing in the state of Colorado so spouses can come here, whether they're a nurse or a therapist, to be able to get their licensure here is really important. And that can help us get more therapists of color, more therapists. You know, I'm Hispanic. I'm the only Hispanic in the race. We, you know, we want to get that out there that our representation, part of that disparity of care is a lack of clinicians of color and minority groups.
Same question.
Yeah. So my wife, who is here today, is a healthcare provider. She's a nurse at Children's Hospital. My son, who is on the line, I think, watching on YouTube, is a chiropractor out in Los Angeles, working with low-income people in the south end of Los Angeles. So I've heard the stories. I've seen the disparities that exist within our society, and we need to treat people with respect across the board, but we need to meet them where they are. And we need to understand their background. We need to understand the cultural issues, whether that's language or just understanding how different families are structured and how not everybody comes from a cookie-cutter family. There's some folks, I've heard some stories, some chilling stories about kids that come into Children's Hospital and the broken families, the drug addiction, the crime issues, the justice issues that people are going through. We have to meet people where they are, and we have to take their background and their situation into mind when we treat them for mental health or any other issue where we're talking about social services that we offer here through the state.
All right. Thank you, gentlemen. Online question. So thank you for submitting this. 1 minute on this one. What do you think you can do to help Colorado catch up with funding and infrastructure in our rapid growth?
catch up with funding. I get back to, I think it's a prioritization thing. I don't think we need to raise taxes. I think maybe we need to enforce our tax laws better. When the IRS added more investigators, they found a whole lot of tax cheats out there. So I'm hoping that our tax agency is working with the IRS to find people who have hired high-priced lawyers and attorneys to get around the tax laws and are not paying their fair share. Same thing goes for our corporations. I think we might be able to raise some money from enforcing the laws that we have. Infrastructure is a matter of prioritization. You know, I think we've got enough money to go around as long as we prioritize those projects like Powers Boulevard that's important statewide. These projects that help the growth of the entire state, the economy of the entire state, we can prioritize and get those things done.
Thank you, Mr. Pearson. Mr. Campagna, same question.
I'm going to go back to 2C. And some of this is really an approach that if you think of a road, you know, we have to look at our public policy issues as multi-lane issues. And funding is a multi-lane thing. And so if we don't pass 2C, that puts extra burden on CDOT. And so looking at all these infrastructure things as things where we have to work across not only the aisle, but across governmental agencies and level of government to figure out how we're going to get funding from the places where it makes the most sense, that is the approach to make sure that we tackle infrastructure. Because infrastructure is not just a state thing. It's a local thing. It's a neighborhood thing. And that's why we have to work across every form of this to make sure it gets done.
Awesome. Thank you. This is a yes or no question. Mr. Campagna, we'll go with you first.
Ooh, okay. Last one was easy.
Do you support school choice? Yes or no?
Yes.
I'm sorry. Can we rephrase that? Do you support the school choice ballot issue that is on the ballot issue? Currently, there is a school choice ballot issue. Do you support that? Yes or no?
I'm going to hold on that. Because I think there's a thing, to your point of the phone book of ballot issues, the ones I'm most concerned about are 2C and the infrastructure. But in general, I'm for school support, but I definitely want to take some time to do a little bit more research to be thoughtful through that.
Sure thing. Mr. Pearson, yes or no?
No.
Thank you.
And I'm happy to talk to anybody about why.
All right, I've got just a few more minutes left. Can I do one more question, two more questions? What are we doing? Yes, ma'am. Okay. They do. Yes, ma'am, they do. Okay. 1 minute on this one. The current free school lunch program is helpful, but many students find the lunches to be unappetizing or unfilling. Again, this is an audience question. I don't know if any of you have actually eaten at one of the schools before. So if you have eaten there, you know, I think this is valid. So, but either way, this is an audience question. We believe it to be valid. Would you support any changes to this policy? And what would they be? 1 minute, and I believe, Mr. Campagna, you are first to answer on this one. Did I mess that one up? No, I'm sorry. Mr. Pearson, you are
yeah,
correct.
I'm sorry, can you reread that? I'm not sure
where
we're going with that.
The current free school lunch program is helpful, but many students find the lunches to be unappetizing or unfilling. Would you support any changes to this policy, and what would they be? And again, I'm going to assume that, for instance, not all schools can opt out of this, if I understand that correctly, school board member back in the back. Schools can opt out of this option, but also what a child eats in seventh grade and eighth grade versus what a sophomore eats and a boy versus a girl is probably very different. So again, would you support any changes to the policy, and what would they be?
Well, I think the policy is important that everyone gets fed. We can't assume in our society that everyone even has a square meal even once a day, and often it's only at school that these folks are getting fed, and I understand that. So it's important that everyone has an opportunity to eat something during the day. Now, I don't know if they're still serving the little square pepperoni pizzas anymore like they did when I was in school. Those weren't the greatest thing either, much like cardboard with tomato sauce on it. So I think the school districts themselves need to work with their suppliers to get a better deal out of these school lunch programs within the budgets that they already have.
Thank you, Mr. Pearson. Mr. Campagna, same question.
You know, I not only food for everyone, but great tasting food for everyone. I'm definitely for that. But I think this also outlines that a state representative, the role is budget at the state level, and the opportunity then to work with local leaders, to work with your school board, to work with the school superintendent, to work with principals like Principal Darian Latimer, who is Educator of the Year, and I always like bragging on him. But this is where there are some innovative things that we've seen at other school boards. D2 has student representatives as part of their school board. I think we need to expand that. How do we get even more teacher voices and student voices in every school board involvement? And that's the benefit of going, hey, maybe as a state legislator, my focus needs to be on state budgets, maybe not on the way I would season the food coming from a Hispanic background. I know how to cook, and I love to cook, and I would love to do that, but to work with local leaders and to support innovative local programs that are already working and getting students engaged, that's kind of the approach we need to take.
Awesome, thank you. All right, so I'm gonna do closing statements. Is 1 minute each, and I believe since Mr. Pearson got that first one, Mr. Campagna, you will have closing statements, if you wouldn't mind, for 1 minute, please.
I appreciate the wisdom of our second president, John Adams, and he warned, there is nothing which I dread so much as a division of the Republic into two great parties. Friends, we have to heed the wisdom of our founders now more than ever. Our community has real needs. We have challenges and opportunities ahead of us, but we don't need partisan extremes. We don't need tired arguments or the same strategies that land us in the problems we currently face. 50.3% of our community is unaffiliated and for a reason. And I'm their candidate and the candidate for every voter who wants common sense solutions over the partisan insanity. We don't need leaders who see this as a step in their political ladders. We need leaders that build coalition, listen before leading, and honor you above every other interest or party. If you want to vote for sanity this November, vote for me, Daniel Campagna. Check out our website, daniel4colorado.com, and we'd love to represent you as your state representative and your representative alone this November.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Pearson, your closing statement.
Well, I'm sorry we didn't have the opportunity tonight to have all three of us speak, and I completely understand why Ken can't be here, and I really think that taking care of your family and taking care of your health is more important than anything else that we can do. But I think it's important for our voters to take a look at the representation that you've had for the past 2 years. Take a look at the bills that Ken DeGraff has voted against. Take a look at the statements that he has made publicly in front of the legislature. Take a look at how ineffective that he has been because of his behavior up there. He's managed to pass one bill in 2 years. And it's not because he's a Republican. There are many other Republicans who've done much better. In fact, one passed 49 bills in 1 year. It's because he's managed to offend everyone he works with. I can be a better representative than that. I will represent everyone in my district. I will represent your voice. I will take that voice to heart, and I will take it with me up to Denver when I consider policy, when I talk to people about what they want to get out of the state government. My first question to ask is, how is this going to help people in HD 22? You need to send somebody to the legislature who's on the winning team, and that's me as a Democrat. In this district, it's tough, but I'm willing to be your representative.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Candidates, audience, can we get a round of applause for your candidates, please? So that wraps up our live, virtual, and recorded forums. We thank you for joining us this evening for Colorado State House District 22. These recordings are available on our the League of Women Voters Pikes Peak Region website at lwvppr.org, on our YouTube channel under Live, and on the League's Making Democracy Work podcast. So thank you again for being here this evening. You had a full house. Applause for you guys for coming out tonight. Hell yeah. Thank you very much.